extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, Kaylin with the C, Carr, David Goss, Matt Doyle. What's up, boys? There's a lot of energy in the air today. David Goss just spit a mint into his water.
So
and
this
I
is
quote,
what happened.
Why are you guys freaking out?
Right before we started recording, you open a mint. Suck on the mint for a second.
Yeah, because I didn't like the coffee. I don't want the coffee flavor in my mouth.
Understandable.
That's understandable.
What do you want me to do? Swallow it whole?
I don't know. Suck on your mint and just be done with it.
Unlike someone, I'm a professional. I'm not going to be sucking on candy in the middle
do
of
you
a
do
audio
regularly?
Form.
Do you regularly spit like mints or Tic Tacs or whatever into your water?
Normally, it is cough drops because I put it in at halftime. And right as we're about to get in the second half, I need somewhere to toss
it. So I toss it into that is professionalism
water.
At its finest.
Wait, so then
into warm water?
Do you bring it back?
What do you mean? No.
Like into the water. No. Does it re-enter?
Well, it actually ends up creating a bit of a like...
There's sediment.
Okay. So like you actually get cough droppy water, which actually helps open up your throat and stuff.
Is this
actually
a broadcaster trick? Is this like something that has been handed down from
it's like a
Kurt
fake
Gowdy or whatever to like?
No, I would say in 2015, I think I broadcast 8 GA Cup games at the same time at FC Dallas Stadium.
And you were just horking.
And there was no hot water. So I was just putting cough drops in my warm, lukewarm out of the sink water.
Oh my
and
God.
Using that to drink. But
you're bringing
it's just
Frisco
putting,
into
putting
this?
Bottles of water
the
out
good
the
people
sun.
Of Frisco.
It's just a way to get rid of. Listen, no one would have known. Like, no one can see that.
I know, David. Like, I
this is
like
soft.
We've been accused in
you.
The past of meaningless banter off the top of shows. And
this is soft.
You've now learned
I think
something.
We all learned of, something from this.
All movie. Of you. You journalists and broadcasters who are aspiring to something resembling this, I guess. I was going to say greatness, but whatever this is, here you go. By the way, we were asked, what's Extra Time's natural habitat?
I was going to say, what? Now it's like, what's its garnish?
A used breath mint.
Oh, wrong answer.
I'm not giving it to other people. It's myself.
We're going to have to leave this in the past. Where is Extra Time's natural habitat for you, Kaylin? What do you think?
Natural habitat?
We're talking about orcas to start the show, and they're sinking boats, and their natural habitat is, of course, oceans around the world.
Yeah.
I would like to have you comment on that. But
I can't be implicated in any of the orca.
You've never seen an orca.
We have video
evidence.
I would say
we have video evidence that you can watch.
We do.
On season pass.
Apple season pass? Yeah, check out the movie.
Well, we don't have video evidence because you've never.
Right. There's no evidence of Kaylin and the orcas in one place.
You actually established pretty well your lack of connection.
It's true. Brian Schmetzer also might be implicated in that. He was very supportive of the orcas and our movement. I lost
easy
all
answer
train of
here. Extra Time's natural habitat.
Oh.
Bar Louie at Patriot Place.
Perfect answer.
Yeah. Or Colin Settleberg said hour 4 of an 8-hour road trip to get to your closest MLS away day, which are our natural habitats, and also now New York, New York. All right. No more. Can we talk U.S. Open Cup? And there's no absurdity here. Nothing. It's going to be a completely serious conversation. Although I will say the Extra Time curse is back. Dave, you took Red Bulls, right, to win the tournament?
I got you.
Out.
I got you, fam.
Done. No cup for them in that competition. I took Nashville. Gary Smith saw that. Fielded the second team lineup. They're out against Inter Miami. LAFC was Kaylin Kyles. Kaylin with the K. They're out. Vancouver are next.
Nice.
Right.
Doyle? Sucks to be Vancouver.
Yeah, Doyle, we should assume that Vancouver is out.
Do I get to pick? I didn't get to pick.
Okay, you can pick.
This is the curse.
The Extra Time curse.
Extra Time. So Vancouver's playing Pacific FC.
Yeah, Pacific, they're guaranteed winners.
And that's, I think that's like the island next door. Is that Victoria Island?
Do not try and get me to understand the geography of because it's Vancouver Island and then Vancouver the city are two different
things. Right.
Pacific is on Vancouver Island,
I believe. The town of Victoria.
Yes.
Yeah.
Victoria is a city on Vancouver Island. I do not even believe the team is there.
Oh, boy.
All yeah. Right. This
yeah,
is
Vancouver might be in trouble. They might not
things.
Even be able to find the game, Weeby.
Yeah.
You can choose from Crew or Charlotte to curse. they're both playing USL opponents. So if we're trying to keep lower division sides in the tournament.
Who's
so
playing the River? The River.
The River Hounds.
The River Hounds.
The Mud Dogs?
The Mud Dogs.
I think the Crew
the
are
Crew
playing,
are at Pittsburgh.
They're in trouble.
And that stadium is beautiful.
They're in trouble.
So we're all rooting for the River Hounds, I think.
Well, go
I'm
Crew.
Go Crew.
Pacific Stadium is located in Langford, British Columbia, which is on Vancouver Island.
I'm wearing a Ricky Pooj jersey backward, and I'm the least ridiculous person on this show right now. Let's get into it.
Let's debate.
Galaxy beat LAFC High in the Open Cup on Tuesday night. We could talk about the play on the field.
Galaxy beat what?
LAFC High. Like, you know, the high school.
Didn't know that's what you were referencing. Right. It, almost I like you could have used the term two or academy, like a soccer term.
Right, right. I just tried to weave that in so if you would catch it. But, you know, on review, you got it. Ricky Pooj scored a goal. It was an incredible goal. A wonderful solo goal, weaving through LAFC and flipping it over Jakubovic. And then he hit the Messi celly, and that's why the jersey's backwards. He went shirt off, taking the yellow card, putting the jersey up, showing the 32-52. This in the Open Cup with the Galaxy in last place in Major League Soccer. But it's still El Tráfico. It's still their rivals. You still got to rub it in. Only Giorgio Chiellini didn't take it that well, I would say. And was we were fortunate to catch Giorgio Chiellini's reaction on video afterwards. Let's take a listen.
Jugamos para ganar títulos. Creo que los jugadores pues se sienten mucho más satisfechos.
Thank you. Thank you to Peter
Anderson. I didn't realize that's how it happened. I just saw it come out on Twitter. I thought Chiellini like said it to media. I didn't realize he just walked.
Well, if you're not watching, you didn't see this. Ricky Pooj is doing his post-game media. He's basically in that quote, if you don't speak Spanish, he's saying, you know, we play to win titles. Talking about the Galaxy, you know, a little little irony there, although they're advancing in the Open Cup. And Chiellini, in shorts and a t-shirt and what looked like some sort of sandal, very casual, glances over his shoulder at the interview and yells payaso and understands the dynamics of a stadium hallway so well. Just knows that when he turns his head, even though he's not facing that way, he's done yells payaso.
Because he's done it in Europe.
Yeah, oh, surely delivered that message before. Yeah, that's where you train.
The echoiest hallway. Yeah,
he's done it in the San Siro, man. You've never done it in the San Siro.
It echoes. It just, through the entire hallway, as Ricky's giving his interview, payaso, 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 which is clown in Spanish.
The one with the spiral walk-up?
Yeah.
Okay. For now, RIP, though.
Yeah, it's true.
What do we think of this?
This is great. I think every part of
pettiness on every side here. And by the way, Ricky reacted to this and saw it, and he went on Twitter and retweeted somebody with a video of him scoring on Chiellini in a friendly while he's with Barcelona with a yawning emoji and the hands in front of the face peeking out between the fingers.
Wow.
Emoji, which you have to do.
I think Anders would like you to cover your mouth more while you talk on this podcast.
Use a breath mint.
Listen, I'm fresh and clean over here. You're the one who has to sit next to him on that side. Doyle got
that microphone is happy about it. These microphones, a little sketchy.
We all love this, though, right?
Oh. So let's start here, though. This was, as you called it, LAFC High School.
Completely, though. Let's be clear.
It was, you know, Mahalo Apoku.
Apoku, very good player.
Well, goalkeeper's my age.
Yeah.
Mateusz Bogusz.
Nice. You wish.
Well, he's also played about as many first-team games as Doyle in the last 5 years.
No, this was a bad LAFC team, and they ran the Galaxy off the field in the first half.
I can't believe you said that. You didn't say Eric Duenas' name in the same sentence. That's sacrilege.
I'm getting through the whole thing, but it doesn't matter. This is a bad LAFC team. They ran the Galaxy off the field outside of the PK, which, of course, by the way, Ricky Pooj missed because, one, the Galaxy are incapable of scoring penalties. If you remember last year when Chicharito missed, three in a row before Pooj finally took them? Though. And then the other part is, bro, you missed a penalty in this game. Then you're going to go and hit a Messi celebration in front of fans playing in borderline an empty stadium against like a lower division group.
Which is, if you miss a penalty, you're not allowed to celebrate your next goal.
I don't know that you get to do the Messi celebration where you I assume he got yellow carded, right?
Yes.
Because he took off his jersey. Yeah.
Which is, by the way, an insane rule.
Agreed.
Insane
horrendous rule. Yeah.
Maybe the worst rule in soccer.
Well, maybe the only reason it is a good rule is to prevent everyone from doing the Messi celebration every single time, like a kid playing FIFA online.
We know why that rule is.
Come on, you remember Josie against Spain.
The sponsors, right?
Jersey comes off. One of the great moments in U.S. soccer history.
Yeah, it's for the sponsors. The best moment is to rip your jersey off. I don't care if you turn it forwards, backwards, throw it over your head. Huangwane did it over the weekend, and you know, 95th minute. I say take the yellow card. Yeah.
Did you ever take that yellow card?
It wasn't a rule.
No, but this is the part is I tucked my shirt in. So it's very rare to see someone in the tuck community to take the shirt
Ricky's
off.
A tuck.
He's a tucker. So it
did he re-tuck after the celly?
He definitely.
Otherwise, it's he'd be dragging his jersey. Yeah.
Also, he wears like a mock turtleneck underneath his kit as well. So
it's that LA weather.
Yeah. Strange choice, but it was an amazing goal. I think he had fully deserved to be able to celebrate that goal.
He was getting an earful all night those fans, especially after missing the PK. It's been a terrible year for the Galaxy. We were just saying on Monday's show, like what makes El Tráfico stand out is that no matter what the situation of the two teams are, like this rivalry always feels like it always delivers moments that are memorable, or in this case, honestly, unforgettable, because you have Giorgio Chiellini, who's one of the three best center backs of the past quarter century, calling Ricky Puig, who really good player, might someday be league MVP, played with Messi, you know, came to MLS in the prime, before the prime of his career, like a unique.
Get it out. It was stuck in my throat. I saw your eyes and I knew. I just knew.
And he calls him a clown, right? Like nothing delivers like El Tráfico delivers. It should have been an utterly forgettable game where LAFC 2 came out and they lost 2-0 because the Galaxy are desperate and they needed to get any. And it turns into this thing because El Tráfico is just unhinged and it's wonderful. And I love that Ricky takes it so seriously that he's doing a Messi celebration in front of the opposing fans on a Tuesday night. And I love that Chiellini takes it seriously enough to call him Bozo the Clown as he walks, through the halls.
Fair game to both of them.
This is what we all want.
Dressed like a dad in Manhattan Beach.
When I saw the lineup, I actually was like, oh, this is actually way more interesting now. Because I thought LAFC against the Galaxy full strength team, we kind of seen how that's gone. And I'm being honest,
it's just like not going to tune in for that one because that's an LAFC.
I was like, maybe this. I'm not trying to be disrespectful, but I was like, it's late on the East Coast. I was like, maybe this will be over quick, and then I was like, oh no, this is. You could tell the way LAFC, the young guys came out. It's actually a really more difficult match for the Galaxy, which is why I don't. It's not easy to play. We joke about the river. I keep river messing it up because I was joking. Yeah, I made the joke. It's the river dogs.
Riverhounds.
Stuck. But it's tough playing. I talked about getting railhawked. Like it's tough to play against either teams from the USL or to play against your rival with the stakes that are at hand for the Galaxy and play against an LA Galaxy or an LAFC reserve team, basically. Where the two leaders on the team are both 21-year-old, promising 21-year-olds with Opoku and Bogush, right?
And Biuk as well.
That team, you could tell from the jump, wanted nothing more than to heap misery.
Yeah, they're desperate for their chance. This is their big opportunity to play in an El Tráfico. And they just came off having the manager back them the week before against Monterrey Bay. There's nobody on the bench, which I thought in a way was like, maybe you'd like a safety valve, but it sends a message to the young guys to be like, this is you guys. Like, we believe in you. We're fully behind you. Go out there and do it. Still a couple moments where the ball gets behind, Brugman's behind. And, you just don't have that experience where you're like, you just panic immediately and maybe pull the guy down, which he did. So just missing a little bit of that experience, but they created a ton of opportunities. I thought gave them a real tough match, and you know, had their way in it. But I don't think it's so simple for the Galaxy to say, oh, you should just walk over this team. It doesn't really work like that. So that's why I had no issues with Puig, who I thought was fantastic throughout the entire night. Like the goal he scored, the balls he was playing, he was everywhere. He didn't, we've seen teams just drop their level when they miss a penalty. And I thought he rose his level after that. But at the same time, if you're Chiellini and you see this guy who played at Barcelona and he's going against like the little kids you're coaching or helping out, you know, in sessions, and he's like rubbing it in their faces and stuff, it's like, yeah, he's gonna back his guys as well and let him know, like, as the, you know, senior player has, you know, done everything in Europe, that, like, you know, your behavior right here is being noticed by me, which I thought was fair game too.
Steve Cherundolo, just a request from all of us, and I think I speak for all of us and anyone listening, that Giorgio Chiellini must start on July 5th.
The next.
Has to. That's the next matchup between these two. By the way, the Ricky Puig, here's his quote on the goal celebration itself. Quote, it's a fan base that puts a lot of pressure and sometimes can be disrespectful, but it is what it is. So he's speaking to the LAFC fan base and the 3252, who I'm sure he was hearing from all night long, especially after you missed that PK. Quote, it's proof the LA Galaxy can own this city, and we went for it.
I love it. Like, this is what we want. Like, the Galaxy are bottom of the table. This game should have meant nothing, and look at this. It's so good.
But we can also follow up by saying, this is a trash quote. They're about to play in the CCL final, and you guys limped across the line against their two team because you're the last place team in the league. When was the last time the Galaxy played in CCL? 10 years ago?
It's objectively kind of crazy, but it's actually like great. That's what we want.
But isn't that what we said about rivalries?
It's better than not having this, but in the context.
Yeah, no, I completely understand what you're saying about the
context. This whole thing.
Yeah, no, I get
this. This is the last place team in Major League Soccer, and we are talking about a team that is about to host the second leg of the CCL final.
Isn't that what we were saying about rivalries on the last show? Where it's like, it doesn't matter.
I don't, when you bring up rivalries, I tune out.
We just invent them and then forget
you just manufacture them, and I can't keep up.
All right, well, all done.
You don't think this is a rivalry?
No, it's 100% a rivalry. Yeah. But, like, it is 100% a rivalry, and I think it's great what you guys said, which is, like, this was a random Tuesday night Open Cup game, and it meant a little bit more for them because it was against LAFC. Also, because part of getting railhawked was flying across the country, where this was a 20-minute drive or 40, depending on traffic. Got me? El Trafico. But This is a ridiculous way to go about this, which is, if there's a single LA Galaxy person who comes out of this year based on the way the year has gone and says, well, we beat them in Open Cup.
It's a lose-lose for the Galaxy, though.
Yeah, 100%. That's what happens when you're the last place team and you start your best team in Open Cup because the only competition you have a
chance. No, but it's better than the other option. Imagine what would happen if they lost to that group.
Guys, I got to tell you, just like looking at the side of the bracket they're on, they got a pretty clear shot to the final.
Wow. That's no great. Respect for if the Dynamo.
I'm sorry. You should have just kept that to yourself. Look what we did to these other poor teams.
Like, that's fair. That's
it's fair. Wide open. Yeah. If they don't get to the final, it's a failure.
Cincinnati would... I don't want to put that evil on them, but...
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it depends on... Right,
Cincinnati will
home draw and all that.
But look, this is a competition they should take seriously.
Because... They have not been able to compete in the regular season.
0.69 points per game in the league right now.
So they'll play the winner of the Rocky Mountain Cup.
Yeah.
In the next round.
That's extremely winnable.
They will travel to the winner.
They lost at home to Colorado.
Yeah, that one's already decided. So since he will host and the other
they'll be motivated. Be extra motivated.
I'd love to see how seriously they both took it. I love to see these kind of sparks in games that could otherwise be completely forgettable. I was stoked about it. Yeah.
I will never forget it, certainly. And I'll probably bring it up like every couple months.
He made a child's dream come true.
Maybe swore the bit he's going to wear the shirt backwards and he wasn't going to mention it. He's mentioned it four times.
I mentioned it one
already.
Time. Come on, the count's at one.
The key with Weeby is he's just so casual about stuff. So he normally keeps
definitely don't beat it into a pulp, right? Yeah. Yeah. We won't use Payaso ever again on this show. Certainly not. But I will be awaiting that El Trafico on the other side of July 4th with bated breath. That should be really, really fun.
Anybody think that the Galaxy spin this into a run of results in the regular season?
No.
Nope.
Mainly because every time we've said that this year, they've proceeded to...
I will just point out the underlying numbers think the Galaxy are a lot better than their record. And the underlying numbers thought the Red Bulls were a lot better than their record. And now under Trelles.
Walk me through what the numbers are saying about the Galaxy. Just help.
They lead the league in chances created. They're third in expected assists. They have 10 goals on 19 expected goals.
So the big issue with the Galaxy every time this happens is they are one of the thinnest rosters. And so every time we say like, oh, they bounce back, they go down to Orlando and they're missing a Brugman or a Chicharito or whatever. And it's like,
yeah, it's not a well.
Oh, this is a USL roster.
I think we have a lot of data that suggests that the people who have been putting the Galaxy roster together over the past 10 years do not know what they're doing. Right. And that's why Will Koontz has been hired. And hopefully he will be able to put people in place who do a better job of building that
without using an international transfer window this summer.
Right. The Galaxy, I will make a wager of some sort that the Galaxy finish above 0.69 points per game.
Sure.
This year. In fact, I'm still pretty sure that this team is going to make the playoffs.
I don't know about that. I mean, they've put themselves in a hole. The one thing I would say is the midfield is, I think, I would almost say elite. I really like this midfield. And the positives, they get a nice goal from Boyd. The questions for me have always been that back line and the problems that they've had conceding goals and the way they conceded goals. And even against this LAFC team, they conceded a ton of opportunities. And that's the part that makes me nervous heading towards the weekend is to say, yes, Ricky Pooj getting momentum, getting that confidence will be big, but I don't really have a lot of doubt that they're going to be able to like generate opportunities or get on track or hit those expected goals numbers. It's more defensively, are they going to continue to concede and make results, which has been the story for them for years.
It's also game states, right?
Yeah.
They're chased in every game. They bring on the second forward.
They score a goal, they lose 2-1.
Yeah. That shifts a lot of those numbers because they create those chances when it's not.
Yeah. I'm not saying they're a good team. I don't think they're going to win Open Cup. I don't think they're going to win any trophies this year. I just think they're much better than their record so far.
The defensive underlying numbers say that they've been unlucky as well.
That's not unlucky. That is a crop of, I'll call them subpar
individual mistakes.
Goalkeeper.
Klinsmann tried to match Jonathan Bond yesterday. Opening 15.
I will say that other than Cincinnati, their first 3 years in the league, what LAFC's keepers have done. What the Galaxy's keepers have been the past few years. Really eye opening in not good ways.
Kenneth Vermeer, I think, is available.
Well, okay. Let's keep it going in Open Cup. Corey Baird hat trick. I repeat, Corey Baird hat trick. Those are his first three goals of the season.
It's a Pac-12 guy. I think maybe Kalen can lead that. Nah.
Dynamo beat beat Minnesota United. Just work them 4-0.
Stanford is the only one worse than Duke.
Manna from heaven for the.
I heard that I heard that he had grabbed. They expected maybe Bossy to grab the penalties, which he always had, and that Baird grabbed it on his own and took it.
Yeah, Bossy's like 5 for 5 in the league this year.
Yeah, he's like the only one who's scored. They haven't had many goals to the run of play, and you know that's been their MO is going through him. Yeah, but he's. But Ben was like, but he made it. And then you could see confidence come throughout. Aliyu was able to get a goal as well, too. I saw him last week in his first start against Minnesota. He looked very dangerous. Gives him something different, a little more direct. Oh, don't do it.
Weavey.
You're doing it?
Weavey.
Oh,
the reverse collar
is
not very comfortable.
Gosh, you just...
You know, we did the.
You know, this
the
show is on camera, right? Did you know this is?
Well, he was off camera when he started
doing it. I thought you were gonna. You were holding it down for me.
But you also did it as slow as humanly possible.
Yeah, well, it's hard. It's quite. It's these are form fitting.
Wow,
we're good to go now, though.
Goodness,
jersey is reversed.
Do you want a sip of water?
No, I'm good.
But I felt that the Dynamo would beat Minnesota, easy to say now afterwards, but after seeing them play each other last week, I felt that they were going to be good. And then, you know, defensively, they've been very good. And that part has been consistent. Steve Clark's been excellent. They've rotated, had to change a bunch through the back line, but they've been consistent. And Minnesota also put a ton into this past week going on the road in Portland. I thought they were going to rest and rotate a little bit then, knowing that the Open Cup was coming up just Tuesday, they flew direct from Portland to Houston, which is not easy to do. It was hot in Portland on turf. Now you're going to Houston, but Adrian Heath pushed the chips in. They got those 3 points in the league and then had to rotate a little bit, although still put out a good lineup. But then
he was disappointed with the effort that he got from a few guys. He did not sound happy after that game. It's understandable. I mean, 4-0, red card, unnecessary red card, to be honest with you. It's a bummer. With Minnesota, the past few years, they've always really taken the Open Cup seriously.
To the final in 19?
Yeah, it was at 19 or 20. Yeah.
It was Atlanta, the last one before COVID.
Yeah, in Atlanta.
Yeah, there was no one in 20, right.
Or 21.
Yeah, so they've taken it seriously under Adrian, so it's a little disappointing to see them go out like this. It's understandable, though, coming off a road win, conference road win in regular season play. I'm not going to read too much into it from Minnesota's point of view, because they've been consistently good defensively this year, and now it's just a matter of like keeping that level in the league as Bebelo Reynoso gets fit over the next two and a half weeks, get him on the field, and then try to hit your stride going forward. But like, this is like short rest, away loss, you know,
down a man, 38th minute, like Arteaga went out.
Yeah, I don't think like, okay, this was,
I don't know if you guys covered it either, but Robin Lud is out for months,
which is worrying.
Yeah, that just happened.
Even if Reynoso's back, that's worrying. Like, that's a guy they can't really afford to miss.
I think it could actually slow down the return of Reynoso, or it probably should. I think there's like, it could go either way, because you could see the pressure to get push Reynoso back in, because we're not generating enough chances. Amaria hasn't, he's got two goals, but both from penalties. San Binjong has one goal, but kind of has been relegated to the bench as of now. Mender Garcia has been, he started this last match, but hasn't really been utilized. Although he did make a really good play at the end of the match to get that ball over to Longwane. But you would think you'd maybe push him in sooner, but I think it's more risky to do that. We've seen Brian Schmetzer talk about this with integrating Rui Diaz and Eber, as far as not risking things too early and making a big mistake to push somebody in. I could see a guy like Reynoso has been out for, you know, since last season, full off season, full preseason, to push him in, I think, would put him at risk potentially for an injury.
But the difference is Seattle's second in the West and they want to win MLS Cup. I think there's an expectation that they'll be playing towards MLS Cup. But for Minnesota,
but their results have not been good either. There's pressure to...
For sure, but Rui Diaz and Eber are less central to any of that. Like, they have more options to use.
Sure.
Where for Minnesota, especially... And I get your point with Robin Lud, which is like, Lud makes the game easier for Reynoso, so that's a reason you bring him together, but they may not get results. They may not be in a playoff spot. Now
they're
in
sixth right now.
Yeah.
That's crazy. I had to do a double take on it. And yes, from, you know, fifth
for sure,
all
but
the
like
way
on
down
points
to 11th,
on points per game, they could be out of the playoffs.
Yeah, for sure.
So yeah.
They're surviving. I just want to flag the Dynamo before we move on. I know the current narrative is that they are this very good defensive team because, you know, they're third best in the league in goals allowed. But if you dig in, and I don't want to become the underlying numbers podcast, but you have to on
this
one.
Late.
Steve Clark is the second best performing goalkeeper in the entire league this year. He's prevented almost 5 goals. If you look at the numbers, they're allowing like middle of the pack shots on goal, middle of the pack expected goals. Middle of the pack expected goals per shot, like all these little metrics that you look at to just see quality of chances, they're giving up chances. It's not like they're preventing teams right now. It seems like it's Steve Clark that's preventing that, so it might not be sustainable. That's just a little flag that I'll wave.
He's been in that situation before. Steve Clark's been like one of the great underappreciated
in Portland. He had some eraser seasons.
Yeah, he was fantastic, and then he didn't have a great MLS Cup, and that's all anybody remembered. But like, he was great that year. The real worrying thing for Houston that they have to really solve now, and like we saw some of it in this game, but I don't know how much stock to put into it. They're dead last in the league in chances created from open play. They still have no way of creating chances. Forget creating goals, like creating chances regularly. They do not do it yet. I think they have some good players on the team. I don't see anyone from their wingers or from their central midfielders who's just naturally going to be that guy. Koko Karaski is an 8. We know Ache is an 8. Bossy, Franco, Corey Baird, like they're good players. They're not centerpieces. So it seems like this first phase under Ben Olsen has gone well. It's hitting a ceiling. and I know it's stupid to say it after a 4-0 win, it's hitting a ceiling with what this team is capable of. And I think when the transfer window opens in 2 months, this is a team that could end up making a lot of moves. The other thing that's been going through my head, I'm sorry to keep going along on this, when you were talking, Kalen, I was thinking, like, what if Wiebe just started, like, turning the shirt inside out again? Like, what if he just, like started, like, just really quietly changing it so that Ricky Pooch was back on the front? I don't know. Like, I wish I had been able to communicate that to him telepathically. It would have been a
God,
moment.
God, the bit could have just been ongoing. I've made my rotation. It's over. Dave, what did you think about Nashville fielding a slightly weakened lineup in the Open Cup in Miami? All good?
I would never say all good about this in Open Cup, because I think we look at a lot of clubs that don't have any trophies, and like, that's okay, right? One team wins MLS Cup. Supporter Shield is really tough to do in a league that is parity driven, but then you do have some outliers that push for trophies like that. So I would never say, yeah, just toss it, because this is an opportunity for a club like Nashville, especially to host big games. That's the big thing with Open Cup, I think, for a lot of teams, like a chance to host a semi or a final. But in saying that, everything is going right for them. Walker Zimmerman's out, so they're a little bit of game-changing depth for them is gone right now. I think I understand the idea of being safe in a moment like that on the road, where you're third in the East, Hani's playing at a high level, it's all clicking in midfield. And let's be real, from the high of 2 years ago, they went through a year and a half of, like, Godoy was never healthy and Dax was questionable as well. And so they have some miles on some of those legs that you want to protect. So I can understand it from their point of view. And I think that they should through this season saying we can win MLS.
He brought on Hani in the 65th minute. Yeah. Brought Fafa. In Daniel Lovett.
Alex Mwiel's armpit. Yeah,
they scored right away. No, Mwiel scored right away. Yeah. But there was the weather break right after that.
Yeah.
And it felt like that killed their momentum. Like, they had more of the game. They just brought on Hani. Mwiel scored, I think, on his first touch, had all the energy. And then after the break, well, I switched over to the Red Bull match, but then came back and saw immediately that Miami had scored. And, you know, but Miami came out with, I think, 9 of 11 starters. Mm-hmm. So they came out.
Well, they don't have any other, they don't even have other options.
Yeah. But yeah, they pushed. I felt like Miami pushed a lot in on this match as well, too.
72 minutes for Randall Leal in this one. Like, that getting him back up to...
And at that spot.
At that spot.
Because it gives you flexibility to just not play Hani there if you don't want to.
Right, because you could still play the diamond, yep. And now Hani is the second forward, and you could just let him be an attacker instead of having him conduct things. So it was a loss for Nashville, but like...
Pyrrhic victory?
No, the opposite of that.
Oh, right.
A Pyrrhic victory means you won, but you can't do that again. Yeah.
To go back to what Kalen's saying about, Dave, you were saying about home games. Sorry. I mean, this is a Miami home game. Like, they've had a little bit of a back and forth, let's say, between themselves and some of their hardcore fans who have been painting TIFOs and the like that are not exactly congratulatory to the staff and the players. So this is an opportunity to show your fans you're serious. Like, when you're on the road, you have Hani on the bench, you bring him on, you try to change the game, it didn't work out, back to the league you go for Gary Smith and the Yotes. All right.
I'm gonna audible here. Does anybody think that Nashville is gonna win a trophy this year?
What does think mean?
Like, would we
better than 50-50? Better than 50.
No. It's less than 50% for me.
Not unless they go make a big signing, right? But they cleared the way, right? Yeah. Akailoba?
They cleared the
way. So if that happens, then I think they could definitely be right in
there.
Would
you, though, say it's that it's over 50% probability?
Let me...
Not over 50%. Yeah. 50% is too high.
That was an absurd number. But whatever number you choose, I will say yes, because I think we've already seen they're a good knockout team.
Yep.
And Leagues Cup, I think, is a good setup for them.
Yep.
And so I can feel pretty safe they're going to make the MLS playoffs. And so it feels like between those two competitions, yeah, I feel comfortable in saying that Nashville.
They're a top, like LAFC right now in a tier of their own, but in that next tier, it's Cincinnati, Philly,
Seattle,
Nashville.
Yeah,
yeah. They need to make the signing to get there, but the fact that with Hani, they will have the best player on the field in a lot of their games. That matters in a knockout tournament. I can't watch you drink that. It's so.
Oh, he's back. We caught you, bro.
It's water.
Well, it's flavored water, technically.
No, let me put a mint in my mouth for a really long time and then drink water because it's so different.
I thought we had gotten over the like return to studio, be in public again thing. Yeah. And then I realized we still got a ways to go.
All norms
I'm
gone.
Still
people are rotating shirts in the middle of this.
Though, so it all worked out.
By the way, Rapids and Toluca in Central Group 4 with Nashville. So.
Are we going to talk Cincy?
We're about to. FC Cincinnati snuck past the Red Bulls on the road. The Troy Lesane era was very close to having just an incredible.
Technically,
start.
Still hasn't lost because I think a shootout is a tie.
Okay, yep. I'll call that fair. Thought they got a little bit hosed on a PK shot late. There's no video review in Open Cup.
There's also no angle.
That's fair.
I don't know how you are
that's
sure
fair.
About that.
I said a little bit. That's thought.
No, that's 100% a penalty.
How?
That's 100%
a how? Penalty. How?
This is. We're gonna go into. You guys are both here. On instant replay. I don't want to deal
for
with
me.
Oh, okay.
In my opinion, I was correct.
Yeah,
on
yeah,
that
yeah,
one.
Yeah. In my opinion, there you go.
I don't know Yuya Kubo at all, though. But I just. It seems like he has come into this. He came into that club at a really bad time, and he has been a really loyal soldier. Like yeah. He came in as an attacking DP who was going to make the Japanese national team, and then spent like a year and a half. Either playing as a D-mid or coming off the bench. So it was just cool to see him start at forward and score. It wasn't the cleanest goal, but...
Living in hell is fire the entire time.
Yeah, sure. So I thought that was cool. And obviously for Cincy, any wins they get where they rotate pieces, I think is big because that wasn't an option last year and it's become more of an option this year. But this is a massive win for them and... I don't see a reason why they couldn't win this tournament.
They're in the same boat. Like the reason why I was excited about Nashville to go to your League's Cup point on them was I thought that they would be a fun MLS team that had more potential maybe in CCL than sometimes they do in League.
And Cincinnati?
Cincinnati too, but Nashville. Oh, but Nashville. I feel the same about Cincinnati. And if you are Cincinnati and you've made the leaps you have as a club, like there's no guarantee like you're in the Supporters Shield lead and you can get a spot via that, but there's no guarantee that's going to keep rolling. But the Open Cup would be a way to guarantee sort of like a progression for you as a club. What?
He said guarantee and he looked at me. And it would also, be fun. It would be fun to have home CCL games in Cincinnati.
And also, the timing lines up well for when this final would be. When is the Open Cup final? Roughly,
it's usually late summer, mid late summer.
Yeah, like I think September has often been
later. That's later than I thought. Because I wonder what this team might look like over time with losing options. But to qualify for a final now, I worry a little bit about Cincinnati as far as you know maintaining that supporters' shield pace, depending on
September 27th.
Depending on what moves they make, you know, if we know that Brenner's gone, we don't know about Vasquez. We don't know, you know, there's just.
Barrial.
We might see them Mascara. Bring people in. But I don't know if that's, you know, that's one of the things that makes me nervous about.
But if you did prediction. It in the summer, let's say they can still win the Open Cup as constructed. Look at what they're doing. If they get home games as well,
absolutely.
It's over.
They are home in their next round against either the
plus
Blood
like
Dogs or.
They, you know, Columbus. We saw in the playoffs last year, they're not an easy out. They gave Philly everything. Very to the, you know, last minute, Vasquez has that chance and. Blake comes up with a ridiculous save, as you know he does. But
and they went to Red Bulls and won.
And also they've you know they haven't really clicked into their full form yet either. Because as much as they say, oh, if they lose this guy, they lose that guy, but like we haven't even really seen the best of them. The thing I keep going back to actually thinking about is that Philly team last year and how Jim Curtin. Because I've seen Noonan come on 360 and talk about it and. You know, I called a couple of their games and, you know, he's pretty honest always about their form and feels like, oh, we haven't hit our level yet. And it reminded me of Jim Curtin last year talking about the Philly team saying, you know, we're not quite there yet. Like we're winning, we're in a good spot in the league, but we haven't, you know, tempering enthusiasm. And then all of a sudden they started rattling off like 6-0, back half, MLS Cup final.
DC
all that.
Came to town and it was just like, sick.
And I'm not saying Philly or Cincinnati is necessarily going to hit those same highs and just start running teams over yet.
But it feels like they're going to figure something out.
Yeah, then, because the thing that is clicking is, you know, back line defensively, all that, not giving up chances, like Mascara's, I would not want to play against that dude. I'll put it that way. Like, he's just, you know, he's always like right on that edge, but in a good way for the most part so far this season, he's been very good. And, you know, I think Miazga probably doesn't get talked about enough, but he's been super solid. But their best chances have generally come from Lobato, like winning balls, pressuring, or Lucho Acosta even pressuring. And now you're waiting to see, all right, well, when does this all fully start to click in the attack? And how do those pieces all, when does Vasquez get his form and all that confidence comes in? And it feels like there's still something out there for them. So, yeah, I mean,
when does it flow?
Reminds me of that. Yeah.
When does it flow? And then you have the summer and they'll get a piece. And that's why I look at them as CCL next year. You have time for that piece to settle. You have time for that flow to come. You have another knockout round for them in the playoffs, which it's clear that they will be there, plus the League's Cup. It's just an exciting project. And, man, that's crazy to say after spoons on spoons on spoons. Let's do match day 15. We'll start with Sounders hosting the Red Bulls, just because we're on the Red Bulls here and we didn't really talk about them. Doyle, early returns on Troy Lissane. Has the Red Bull way changed at all? What just, are the tweaks?
Like, they're still super direct, but they're keeping the ball on the ground more. They are, instead of blasting it long to Corey Burke's head every time this past weekend, they were able to, you know, ping balls through the middle, use that, because they have good creative central, well, not super creative, but like good technical central midfielders. Guys like Stroud and Caceres, Yearwood could ping a pass as well. Good feet. And they've started to use that more instead of just launching it into the channel every time. So just by keeping the ball on the ground more, I think guys have gotten more comfortable playing with each other. And I think that's being expressed a little bit in the final third. Because it felt like under Struber, it was always a rush to just get the ball to the penalty spot as quick as you can. And we're going to have runners and just like, do it.
And a little bit of hockey, like get it in the zone.
Yeah. It's four games, so what do I know? But like it hasn't felt quite like that under Lissette.
I wasn't listening to you. Nigeria just is going to be Italy in the U20 World Cup. What up, Thomas?
What up, Thomas?
And the celebration is amazing from guy who just scored in extra time or stoppage time.
This is a 2-0. I should have known. There was a U20 World Cup game going on.
Yeah.
What happens U20s. When, by the way, Luquinhas,
Daniel Edelman just pulling strings against Fiji.
Oh, man.
Get locked in.
He's going to be on a different level when he returns to the Red Bulls. Luquinhas made a return off the bench. Sounds like Lewis Morgan is sort of back. You were talking about perhaps string pulling midfielders.
Like, those guys can play. I mean, I don't think either of those guys is a best 11 MVP candidate type of talent, but both those guys are good on the ball, good with the ball. I think better in a situation where that is valued rather than in the murder ball that they were playing under Struber.
So Frankie Amaya would put in that as well.
Absolutely, 100%.
It also just seems like vibes are better, and I know that's very like Bobby Warshaw, we're examining body language stuff, but it just feels
the elephant in the room is Dante Van Zier came back. Dante Van Zier scored the equalizer for Red Bulls in the 93rd minute last night. He looked very good by all accounts.
He scored 2 minutes later again.
Yeah. By all accounts, it was an anonymous, unanimous welcome back to the team from the people in the locker room, and that includes black players.
To like put a little more context to that, and I would encourage you, if you haven't, to go, the Red Bulls put it out. It's a long press conference clip from Troy Lissane. I thought he was very good in sort of addressing, as you said, the elephant in the room and what's happening within the team and how they're handling it and what his opinion is, but also what the opinion and the actions of the players around have been. And they had a vote. Do we want him back?
Yeah, it wasn't by all accounts. They published
that. Yeah, they had a vote.
Yeah.
And the vote came back, and it was unanimous from the players on the Red Bulls.
And it's important that it was anonymous as well, so that like nobody, if somebody was in there and saying, no, you know what, I'm not comfortable with, I don't want to go, but like that part I wasn't expecting, and to me that part stood out a little bit. But it's still strange to me. It's a tough one. It's not something that is comfortable to think or talk about, but it exists, and so we have to a little bit.
Boy, do we have to in this game. We don't have to go into the Vinny Jr. stuff, but I think we can all... we all know where we might stand on that one and condemn actions and racist actions against players and others, and we'll continue to do that. But the Red Bulls on the field maybe have a new life under Troy Lissane. The Sounders are clinging to life a little bit.
Yeah, they got ran off the field against Vancouver.
Ryan Schmetzer, I went and watched his whole press conference after that game. It is always worth watching Brian's press conferences. He is a little bit like Adrian in the sense that when he feels or thinks something or sees something not up to snuff, he is always going to just say it.
I just have Brian send me his notes.
Gotcha.
Because he's always taking notes the whole time.
He basically, he was very direct about the lack of, he just said they didn't compete.
Yeah.
We're not competing.
We're and not this doing, keeps happening to them in Cascadia Cup games. He said the same thing after they got, you know, they got run off the 4-1 field by Portland last month.
Yep. That was the first game they didn't have Christian Roldan.
Right.
I just want to point that out. And he was talking a lot, Brian, was about like pressing cues, attitude on the field, off the ball movement, intangibles. And you're like, oh my God, like everything he's saying is just Christian Roldan in a nutshell. And that's not to put it on one player. Like, hey, when Christian Roldan comes back, this team's going to be all good. But, you know, maybe we have continually, even though we've been all over it, like Christian Roldan this and that, underrated him even more so than he was before because they just don't look the same team without him. I know they're rotating in other places. You know, Jordan Morris has played everywhere on a front three. Raul Diaz is still out. He's apparently 50-50 TBD. I think Roldan is back in training, but not ready to go after being in concussion protocol. But Leo Chu has been out. I mean, they've just been going through a raft of injuries and absences.
Who had malaria?
But you still expect sort of a baseline from this Sounders team of competitiveness, especially after their start.
You would hope so, but it's a long season, and remember, their season started a month before everybody else's because they played in Club World Cup. It's not surprising to see a dip, especially when you're missing so many big pieces and you've had to juggle so much. I'm 0% worried about the Sounders. I think come middle of next month, they'll probably start stringing wins together. They might go out and win Leagues Cup or something like that, especially once they get Roldan and Rui Diaz back. So I think if you're a Sounders fan right now, and Anders is like openly sobbing into my headset right
now. It's unbecoming, but, Anders.
Yeah, if you're a Sounders fan right now,
it's very Swedish of him. It's so emotional.
Yeah.
It's like the frustration palpable and completely understandable, especially because it came against the Caps and it came against the Timbers before that. But it's like, as people who have watched this team, like last year was an aberration. We're not heading towards another version of, you know, whatever 2022 was. Like I would stake money on the Sounders finishing top two in the Western Conference.
Schmetz's never won a Shield though, right?
2014. Right. That's the thing. Like, yeah. I felt like they had a chance to win the Shield this year because they didn't have CCL play.
Yeah.
But the injuries have piled up and hit them in a way that it's tough to keep your head above water, especially when there's orcas down there.
Don't they still have a chance to win the Shield?
You'd think the orcas would help the Sounders.
Yeah, they do still have a chance. And as said, the thing about Seattle in the past, like what we saw for Philly last year, is like when they get on their roll, they get on their roll and they really start to crush teams and teams. You know, it feels like the spirit's out of them before they even show up, especially for Seattle home games. Like, when Seattle's good, that's who they are. And you add in, while they've had these injuries, they do have depth. So when they're good, they can still rotate and keep performances going. But on the like grit side, you talk about Roldan. Joao Paulo's also been in and out.
Yeah.
I think that's the other half. I felt like in the Vancouver game, Rusnak gave them some of that bite. Like, he was high energy. He was all over the field. He was trying to create things left and right. He is not an emotional leader, I don't think. So I don't know how it trickles down to other people where it feels like Joao Paulo, Nico Lodero, Rui Diaz, Christian Roldan, those guys are. And it feels like that's what they're missing.
Three straight home games, Red Bulls, Quakes, and then Portland. So pretty crucial sort of pick you up, see where you're going point of the season for the Sounders, who, as we said, look, it's been going poorly for the last 8 games, all comps, 2 wins in that time. And they were both sort of like, not exactly dominant anyway. It was
they're giving teams the win their first Houston. Win. They gave Kansas City their first win. They gave Austin their first win in like 8 games or something like that.
But it's still a team with 23 points.
Yeah.
They have more games played than most with 14, and they've won 4 at home and won 3 away. So pretty balanced all out, even though Anders is chicken littling this whole thing, obviously.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's keep it moving here. All right, let's hit Toronto. I want to read this statement from Toronto FC just to provide clarity on Lorenzo Insigne's travel and status for the Austin match last week. It was Lorenzo did not travel, To Austin, a little clarification here. Because of a foot injury, Lorenzo was out on the field on Friday. He hoped he would be okay. Still struggling. He met with Bob Bradley and the medical team, and he did not get on a flight to Austin. So Lorenzo Insigne was not in Austin, a match that Toronto FC lost at the very, very end to a Jesse Zardes goal. And I believe, just to repeat from last show, had three shots. So there is a little clarity on that one. I would say that, you know, it remains an absolute wreck in Toronto. Like, I don't think that people are getting along behind the scenes and that everything's okay.
It's not behind the scenes. Bernadeschi basically said it.
Yeah, well, and I think
in his press conference.
In the bright lights, they're not. And I think that fairly reflects what is going on behind the scenes.
I don't think it makes things more positive that your always injured, super expensive DP is injured. It changes maybe the issue, but the issue still exists for the last place team in the Eastern Conference.
Is there a way to pull out of this? Like, how would you go about trying to pull out of something like this?
I'd probably start by going back in time and signing Mark Delgado to a longer term contract. Yeah. That would probably be my first move. And then from there, I'd start to build.
Have you been in a locker room ever, Kalen, that's been in, let's just, that's had some disagreements about the path forward, let's say?
Yes. And then I got out.
Well,
it's kind of
How about that?
Well, you start to see one fall, and then when I was in Chicago, you start to see one guy leave, and then the next guy leaves, and then you're like, oh man, like these are players that I respect, that are good players, and then McBride retired and CJ retired, and it was just like, you could just see it all kind of like falling apart, and you were just waiting for somebody to come in and fix it. And it just never was happening. In fact, it was just kind of going further off the cliff. And, you know, I didn't ask to go out. I think Houston started the conversation, but I was happy to go there because, and the thing was, is I would say, for the players, maybe like, not Delgado in this case, because he's landed in another mess. But for the players that have like gone, that end up in a, why is everything I say funny? It's like,
it's not, I don't even know if it is.
I find
Dave's reactions and laughs.
I just see
intoxicating.
Like the second time I've said something very
intoxicating.
I just didn't realize the Galaxy are about to catch another one. And
it's
I appreciate it.
Every week on the show, we go through these games.
You're right.
But for those that like maybe go like a Schaffelberg where it's just like you go somewhere else and maybe it's not as, you know, I don't know. Nashville is, I mean, I'll speak from my perspective. You go to Houston, you're going from at that time, a club like Chicago that had all of the kind of hype. We brought in big stars. We brought in Blanco. We brought in McBride. We brought in all these big players.
Nery Castillo says his name.
Yeah. Well, that started, that was a part of that era. And it started to go off the rails and you're like, I got to Houston and I was like, man, we are like driving to training from a football stadium to a practice center. We don't have our own stadium. We like, there were like rats eating the protein bars in the locker room. It was like, it was bad.
They were jacked.
All the old stories that you would imagine were a part of that. But I was like, we have a manager that tells you exactly
right,
like where you stand, why you're playing, why you're not, tells you to your face.
I don't believe that Bob Bradley is not doing that.
I'm not trying to catch him.
No, I know you're not, but like to take your perspective and like understand, you've been there, right? You've been in a locker room for a team with high expectations that has fallen apart and because it didn't have the proper kind of leadership. I don't believe for a second that Bob Bradley is not giving these guys tactical instruction.
Yeah, that's.
I just don't. And like, okay, maybe he's not the right manager for them. That's fine. Like, that is a different thing than coming out and saying we're not getting tactics.
There's a difference between saying we don't have tactics and you not liking the tactics.
But to be clear, in that post-game press conference from Bernadeschi, he spends 5 minutes complimenting the effort, energy, and focus of every single player on the team. So he's not saying the tactics don't fit us or we're not executing the tactics. Like, he was very specific about stating.
No, it's,
I think it came about because they asked about the young players. And he was like, they are trying as hard as they can. The veterans are in training, in the games. We just don't have a clear vision.
Yeah. It's bizarre.
So I agree with you.
I mean, it feels like players using their stature to try to effect change. And that is the sign of a broken culture from the top down. You know, it doesn't, like, Bob Bradley's not the highest person in that organization. Bill Manning is, you know, and Bill Manning was the one who made these moves to sign Insigne and Bernardeschi. And I'm sure, you know, Bob probably had some input on that as well.
I think they signed Insigne before Bob.
That's true. They did. Yeah. So it feels, the process there feels broken, and it doesn't feel, and this is outside looking in, right? Though we've all heard stuff from people who are on the inside. The process there feels broken, and it feels like the people who should be in position to fix it are the people who maybe broke it in the first place. And it goes back to, like, Tim Bezbachenko left five years ago?
I think he joined in December of 2019.
Okay.
In Columbus.
That was never backfilled. The entire front office from the great years for Toronto FC, which basically 2015 through 19, like, all those guys have left. That team was deep. That team was well put together. That team didn't make mistakes like letting Mark Delgado go. In fact, they picked him out of the dispersal draft. You know, like when you lose that much institutional know-how, and the culture is as kind of shattered as it is, it's ugly on the outside looking in, and it's probably going to cost people jobs, players, coaches, front office, whoever. It should not be like this.
We said it was going to be boom or bust. That was like the narrative. That's
so. I would just say to that point,
it's feeling that way. The thing that surprises me is that, to your point on Bob, like, if I looked around the league and I was like, okay, what manager, you're going to bring in these two Italians, huge personalities, like, what manager can handle this and like keep them pulling in the same direction as the manager, basically? And I would have said Bob, like, off the jump. It was like, oh, that's a good
guy
fit.
Who coached Vela and Stoichkov and whatever.
That's a great fit. Like,
he got the absolute best out of Carlos Vela. Yeah, he got, Stoichkov came here. If you look at Stoichkov's numbers, the first year he was in MLS, it was like MVP numbers. And this was a guy who was famously not easy to coach. Same with Peter Novak. And that was Bob.
Early years with Echeverri. I know he's not the head coach in that situation, but like seeing those things go down, the national team, all the personalities you have to wrangle there. I'm not saying that that's Insigne and Bernardeschi, but
I was just, part of the boomer bust that you talked about was that they is top end talent.
Yeah, they were over reliant,
but a lot of it was a thin roster and a lot of injury concerns or age. So in your pullout conversation that you really wanted to have, that answer would be everyone gets healthy. And everyone's healthy, and now Matt Hedges plays every single game, and Michael Bradley and Mark Anthony Kay and Jonathan Osorio play every single game. And then they're probably a playoff team. Like, I would be shocked if all of those guys were in the team, plus the addition of CJ Sapong and Io Akinola healthy. I don't even know if
they're 5 points out of the playoffs right now. Yeah, it's the entire playoff ever. Line. Yeah. At
is Diamande still absurd. On the roster?
Diamande's still on the roster. I think he played last week. One point that I want to make, that I've been thinking about, I've been discussing Toronto with a bunch of, like, every group chat I'm in, we've been discussing Toronto because it's so fascinating. The balance on that front line for LAFC, with Vela on one side and a center forward who was hard worker, whoever it was, they were there to work, and then Rossi on the other side. Vela and Rossi, both excellent players, very different players, very different players. Rossi was always making those runs off the ball, trying to get, you know, into scoring spots around this. If you look at Insigne and Bernardeschi, they're both wide. Neither really is making those direct hard runs off the ball, stretching the field. All of that is on the center forward, which changes the balance a lot, really, when they're in possession, because now the whole game becomes more compact because like the center backs just step up, play the center forward off. Okay, CJ's got to come back. And now suddenly instead of 25 yards of space, you have 18 and it's ugly. So the fit, even though Insigne and Bernardeschi are both very good players, you know, MVP caliber players in theory, they're not really making each other better when they're on the field from what I've seen. I'm not sure that was thought about before these two signings were made.
Look, we'll end it here. I don't know that we have much to add. We've really...
You don't want to do a fifth show of a 20-minute yeah. TFC segment?
Well, I'll switch to the other side.
Well, last thing I'll say, okay, go ahead. Real quick. Yeah. You can have the best tactical setup at all, but if you don't have buy-in to the tactics...
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. And the only way to get buy-in is with points, is by like putting your plan out there and getting results, and people then start to follow you. And this happens with any new manager stepping into a place where it's, you know, it's like, oh, we want to play this way. We want to play this. And you're like, okay, well, I'm with you. I like the idea of that, but I want to see this work for me individually. And especially if you have star players that want to get theirs. But then also from the group to get those points to cement that philosophy. And then once you're not getting results and that compounds, then the locker room starts to splinter as I'm with the coach or I'm not with the coach. And that's where I would start to worry, is to say, okay, there's no, if you were to give me any manager, you'd say, here's the tactical problem, here are the pieces you have, I would pick Bob Bradley as like one of the first names to fix that. But it seems like from the comments of Bernardeschi and others that the buy-in part is where it's not there, and the results haven't been there either. So now it just starts to compound.
Hard to get people to sacrifice and be selfless when you don't have that results side, right?
It's like, well, but then you don't get results if you don't sacrifice and change the way you want to play. So
yeah, it's a tough situation. DC United getting some folks to band together. Kalen,
they won.
Yep, there you go.
They won, and so it was more fun. So then they all did the thing to do it again so they could win again, and then they're having a good time.
Go figure.
Oh, yeah. Greg in D.C. says, Rooney swallowed his pride, switch formations, now in or winning everything. I don't know what that means.
They're now in or at least win.
They're competitive.
They're competitive. Yeah. Despite being projected to finish bottom like by everyone. If he maintains this, he'll get a top manager job because he's potentially very good and sells tickets. Give me some positives outside Benteke, Kalen, because we have just waxed about Christian Benteke over and over. It's the easy conversation with DC, but do you have any other positives to add?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Every time I watch them, Tyler Miller scares me, man, with the way he comes off his line. But
that's what Rooney wants.
I know that's what he wants. Yeah. And he gets most of them right, but it's always like right on that edge of like, I can't believe they're doing
most
this.
Most is a very big word in that sentence when you're talking about a goalkeeper who's 50 yards away from goal.
Yeah. But man, it's been... But I think even the way that that's set up has been clever from Rooney to understand they don't really have a lot of pace in the back line to be able to, like, they need to be make the field smaller, push up. They're playing a lot of direct balls, so they can't sit deep and leave those lines open. So they have to push higher, which then means your goalkeeper has to play that sweeper keeper role. So it's kind of like if you're playing direct, that's sort of an effect from that cause. Lewis O'Brien's been very good. He's... makes me a little nervous because he's been so good that he's probably not going to stick around. I think he's on a short term move just to the summer window. So they might have to fix him or fix that spot. They've been able to survive some injuries, which has been good so far. But I think Lewis O'Brien has given them something a little bit more in possession. And then the other thing is I think we're talking the pre-show. Is it all Benteke? And it's like, yes, it's... And you just asked me again. It is all Benteke.
It's the opposite of Insigne and Bernardeschi in terms of buy-in.
I mean, he is insane the way he's able to bring down balls off his chest that he has no business bringing other people in. And I think there was like some stat on Tyler Miller's balls to him. He's like one of the best passers in MLS, like percentage-wise, because he just puts it up and he's just bringing it down off his chest. It's insane.
He chested one down with Martin Caceres hugging him.
Yeah.
Off Caceres' arm on his chest and brought it down. So he used the defender's body.
The last thing is I would say he's been able to bringing in Lewis O'Brien and Cleek and others, like he's been able to use his youth in a more responsible way. At the beginning of the season, he was using all these young guys at once where you know, it was Green, it was Cudipietro, it was
Fletcher,
all these guys.
Yeah, Akinboni.
Akinboni, yeah. And it was like, okay, you can tell there's something there, but when you play four at a time, like that's where you no longer have that support system or partner to kind of protect you. And now it's more like, Cudipietro, come off the bench, give us something different. And he's been the big one for me as far as somebody for a team that's so direct and so predictable and so like ruthless at that. He gives them something a little bit different when he comes into games because he kind of goes off script. He just does something that you're not expecting. He'll try something creative. He might even run out of position. Like he'll just kind of end up on the left flank or in the box, and he just has a really good sense for it and a little bit of personality that I think Wayne Rooney's done a good job of kind of saying, like, hey, go into these matches, express yourself. But it's easier to do that with one young player or two than to like push all four in and say, all right, fellas, go make the game.
Can I just say on this question, the he'll get a top manager job, whatever. He's Wayne Rooney. He's famous. He'll be fine. But it can't be ignored that he got there last summer and the offseason went poorly for them in terms of like efficiency. It was him being in charge of bringing the players in who don't fit the style he wants to play. And they've missed on a ton of moves. And so he's doing the best that he can with the group. And that's great because that's all that matters is like results. But big picture, I think the assessment of his job is not, even if they do well this year, I don't think will come out as clean as, oh, the results on the field. Because he signed Ravel Morrison last year and then had all of offseason. Now he's doing nothing. Right. And a lot of these other pieces. So I think Dahomey's been a good pickup for them. It's like not efficient money. And he makes a lot for not that much production, but he makes them better right now. And he will for the rest of this season. Again, okay, how does he assess that player? And then what's the decision in the offseason? Because I don't think they handled that well last offseason.
Lewis O'Brien, another sort of like short term, but it's working now. But you have to question what happens again in the long term. Orlando Atlanta, historic rivalry. In this league, one of the, I mean, the just the deepest veins of dislike. But the father is gone. Is Yorgios Yakomakis the son, Doyle?
I don't know, Weeby. What do you think?
I think he could be. 8 goals so far in a 527 minutes. He's got 3 off the bench in the last 2.
Reference. Got it.
You just got it?
Yeah. I knew you were going to try and get it in somewhere. I just thought you'd start yelling Orlando.
The Holy Ghost whisper in your ear?
Yeah.
Sorry. My bad. You need somebody to like rev things up. Yeah. And Yakumakis feels like he is just, you know, one little moment away at all times from screaming at a teammate for the ball, which he did in the last game. Pointed his hands at the ground, just like lost it, threw a little fit, and then turned around and the ball was coming back to him and he scored it. So it's a flip side of Yakumakis. And then he can get in behind. He can be the physical presence in the box. He feels like a little bit like a Rui Diaz-esque signing from Garth, of like a guy in that age profile with success at, you know, fill in the blank big club who's looking to be sort of the shining light for somebody for the next 4 or 5 years. He looks that part, Doyle. He looks like a big-time star and a Golden Boot candidate for a long time.
Yeah, if they can keep him healthy, and I don't think he is in the part of his career where he's dying to go back to Europe. He wants to be the centerpiece of a team. He wants to score goals. He wants to make as much money as possible. You could check all those boxes, and probably he wants the Scottish press to write
wistful headlines about his success.
And you can check all those boxes other than maybe the Scottish press thing.
Oh, no, they're doing it.
In Atlanta.
So much cover.
And it gives Atlanta a focus for what comes next. Because what we have seen through 2.5 months of this season is that what's there now is just, it's not going to end up being good enough. Almada is excellent. He will be gone at latest. He will be gone at the end of the season. He might be gone this summer. We know Luis Araujo. He's gone this summer. It doesn't feel like Ibarra or Sosa are going to be long-term solutions.
Rosetto will be there forever.
Rosetto will be there.
He is part of the furniture at this point.
In so many ways. Miles Robinson might be gone at the end of this year. Having a center forward who is that reliable and that basic Like, there's no bells and whistles to Giakoumakis' game, right? He is what he is. Makes it, I think, easier to just build back from there. Like, okay, well, we need one winger who provides really good service, and we need one who's probably a little bit dribbly, and we need a true number 10. We need a ball winner and a conductor in deeper in the midfield, and then we need two flying wingbacks. Let's get after it. And I think that, like, it is a really good first step in getting out of this perpetual cycle of mediocrity that Atlanta's been stuck in since 2020. And I think it's where they're going to end up this year. This is not going to be a title winning, unless major changes happen, this is not going to be a title winning team this year. But there's going to be like, oh, okay, the path is clearer now.
We haven't actually talked about this, but if that's the case, would you not maybe, if you're assessing it and saying we're not going to win MLS Cup this year and we have more work to do, not proactively sell Miles Robinson and do right by him so that it's like, doesn't work out.
Is that right by him?
You want to come back.
Is that what he would want? Yeah.
If he doesn't want to sign a contract because he wants to go somewhere.
Wouldn't he be able to get more money on a free?
And maybe, but wouldn't he be able to start in preseason with the team he's going to go to and that's get fair. His feet wet?
That's true.
And get comfortable. And then you're the first option back if it doesn't work out and he wants to come back. Plus you get something.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I hadn't thought of that because, like, I'm just an idiot on a I'm just an idiot on a podcast saying they're not going to win anything this year. Like, maybe in the locker room and in the front office, they're like, no, once we get healthy, we're going to be really good and we could win stuff this
year. I feel like if you have Giakoumakis healthy and Almada, they could win any of these. They could win Leagues Cup, they could win MLS Cup. Would it be likely? Would I give them a 50% probability? No, I would not do that. But they could believe it's
likely. You'd wear their jersey backwards.
I would turn it around three times on the show.
So you're in.
Yeah.
The other thing is they've had players leave before, but it's often as of late been guys they brought in that didn't really work out. So it's like,
Franco's of the world.
Yeah, or like
Luis Araujo of the world.
Petey Martinez or Barco, these guys where it's like, okay, we kind of, you know, need to just make our money back on these. The Thiago Almada one's very different. Like, you know, he's leaving whichever time it is. So you can actually begin to plan for that. Whereas before it felt like they're more scrambling. So I think there's more. And now they also have Garth Lagerwey. So you know that he's going to have some ideas as far as being out there and, you know, what his vision for this next phase is. So I think that's more positive than it feels like for a while. They're kind of just like, oh, this didn't fit or that didn't work. And now they're kind of clearing that out. And now it's more like you can plan moves which is the way I think you would want. The window is always getting shorter in MLS for all these clubs to really compete. How do you sustain that? Part of it is by getting the signings right so you can plan to move them out.
By the way, though, in the meantime, they're going to be the Cincinnati of last year, which is that 4-3 games, 5-2 games, just goals aplenty. This is the team doing it. They're number one in the East in goals scored and they're number two in the East in goals allowed. A 3-3, a crazy 3-3 against Chicago was completely on character.
I think we talked about Brenner and you were like, I'd play him, get what you can out of him.
Which seems like that's not going to happen, by the way.
Would you do the same, though, with Araujo?
I didn't know that.
He had an ankle thing that he's dealing with in Brazil. But I think it was just like, oh, hey, you know what? Everybody's good if you go rehab and get ready.
Plus
for
you got Baggio, man.
Yeah, obviously. Tom.
Yeah. Did you listen to the show? Did we give the proper love?
I carried the torch for you, though. Yeah. It sucks to be you, but I carried the torch for you. He's a BU guy.
Oh, okay, got it.
And I'm a Northeastern guy, and it is a rivalry as deep.
This is still rivalry.
As a U.S. Open Cup, El Tráfico match.
You were in a big rivalry. Okay.
Okay, you can continue.
Okay, cool. Where in the world is Kalen Carr this weekend? Kalen Carr?
Montreal. Yeah, I had to think about that. Oh,
nice place to be in late May.
Oh. Yeah, yeah.
I got Rex.
Woo. Is your liquor bottle still up there?
I have Rex. I didn't say I was buying you drinks.
Okay. Didn't say I have gifts.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
but I have Rex.
You go by big in Japan. Just say you know David Guss.
I had them earlier this year. I caught them at a tough time. I mean, the first time was after them their long road trip, and it was at the very end of it. They lost 4-0 to.
Lucky for you, you've caught them at another semi tough time.
Now it's tough again, but you know, I think the positive for them is they've been good at home and going on the road against these last two matches. They had to play at Cincinnati. We know how that goes for everyone. And then they had to go to, then they played at Red Bull Arena, which is just always you know, unpleasant. So it's just like a difficult
they
experience.
Felt they should have gotten a result out of that.
Yeah, too. Yeah, for sure. And so, you know, I think them returning home, playing against a Miami team that's, you know, in a kind of a desperate spot as well, too. There's a lot at stake there. There's some extra intrigue in this one because of the trade that was made between the two teams earlier with Kamal Miller going down. He's played every minute for Miami, but the back line has been kind of still struggling to kind of shore things up. And then Bryce Duke, who hasn't looked as good in these last couple matches. He's had some nice service from set pieces, but I think more than anything, like, he's still a really good piece. He's actually proven, I think, we all sat here and said, what is this move? And he's proven to fit very well into that system for Losada as far as they tried a bunch of different people out, whether it was Sean Rea or Chouanier or different guys in that sort of underneath 10 position to facilitate. And those guys, I think, good players. Chouanier is still a big piece of what they do. But I think Bryce Duke has given them something different. You guys have covered it very well on the show. But that's the intrigue, I think, for this weekend.
What's this team's ceiling, you reckon?
Ooh, for Montreal?
Yeah.
What'd Dave pick them at preseason?
I think... Was it reasonable? I'm pretty sure.
It was quite high, wasn't it?
Fifth.
Oh, okay. That's reasonable. Yeah. I'll give you that.
Which I, by the way, I still think all that's still in play.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I would say ceiling is, I would say 7 to 9.
It feels like, so one is it feels like George Campbell raises their floor. I think he gives them his ability to even just dribble out of the back. It feels like Bryce Duke's going to get more comfortable. That's going to make them better. A lot relies on who the forwards are. Like if Kyoto gets healthy, is healthy, I think that changes their season. But I've liked 04 and I like what he brings. If I was a Montreal fan, I'd still feel pretty good about the group I have.
We have a report here filed from one producer, Anders, who we have to ask a David Goss of the past what his prediction was for Montreal.
I'm getting hit this week.
11th in the East. That was your prediction.
No way.
Yeah.
Wow.
Montreal?
Your own people.
No, that's not right.
Fraud.
That doesn't sound right because he was talking about them as being just as good this year as they were.
I thought so too, but I, you know, Anders,
you know what it is? It's like he just changes.
Anders is trying to set him up.
That's not right.
He's just changing it every week.
Anders is a snake in the grass.
So always, I don't know how to find this though.
Yeah, I don't know where Anders found it either. He says he's going to send it to you. He's emailing it to you right now. All right. Our extra time games of match day 15. Doyle, what's your match?
Colorado hosting Cincinnati. FC Cincinnati are 8-0-0 at home. They lead the Supporters Shield race by a pretty decent margin. 5 points, could be more than that if they win their game in hand. This is not technically a game in hand because everybody else is playing. But anyway, they're really good. They are one win.
I did have them 11th.
Wow.
Wow.
God, the more you know.
Wow. The more you know.
Apologize to Anders.
I'm no longer name dropping you up there.
No, you shouldn't. Wow. This is an eye-opening experience. I did pretty well in the other ones except Red Bulls.
The season's not over yet.
No, season's not over. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, there you go. Cincy have 1 win from 5 on the road. Playing at Colorado is always difficult, even though Colorado are winless at home this year.
It's gotten bad. I was happily banging the drum for the Rapids and like rooting on the little engine that could, but they like blew a boiler and they're just smoking on the side of the road.
There's no central point of their attack when Rubio's out.
Correct.
All these guys who do good things, Barrios, Cabral, whatever,
and they don't have Price anymore either.
And they're just giving up soft goals.
Yeah.
That's a big thing. They had no margin. Yeah. It had to be like 0 or 1 a game allowed. Otherwise, they were going to lose 3 in a row.
However, they're at home. Their backs are up against it a little bit. And Cincinnati are playing their second road game in 5 days. Granted, they did rotate a bunch on, you know, last night against the Red Bulls. But it's hard. It's hard to go on the road and win. If Cincy start doing it, you know, could this be a 70-point team? Could this team threaten the mark that the Revs set 2 years ago for the Supporters Shield? Like, I don't think it's in play yet. 3 points this weekend, 3 points next weekend, 6 of their next 9 are on the road. They start racking up results, then we're probably having that conversation.
No back-to-back home games the rest of the way for Cincinnati.
Jeez, just I didn't know this. Yeah, that's wild.
Since you do have, I think, 11 one-goal wins. So.
And only 3 losses in like their past 34, 35 MLS regular season games, which is insane.
Pretty mind-bending form.
Yeah.
Let's talk about, Dave, the rematch here from the Eastern Conference Final the past 2 years.
I'm still locked in on this Montreal previous stuff.
Boy, that's a big day of the year when you're confronted with your predictions.
So it's actually the predictions are fascinating.
Just a preview in NYCFC.
Kaylin Kyle had them third. Melissa Ortiz had them ninth. No one else had them higher than 10th.
Yeah, I knew Kaylin really. She went for him.
On NYC Philly, this has been fun the last 2 years, right? And there is other stuff to this rivalry now. I think especially coming out of 2021, the way Philly fans and Philly and Jim Curtin and anyone else that has ever had a cheesesteak in their life feels about the way that Eastern Conference Finals went down and then how close they got and all of that. And then you flip it around to last year where Maxi Morales has a moment of brilliance, but I can tell you, like, being in the building, the release when Philly finally won it. And so I do think this is one of those that, as we saw with SKC RSL back in the day and other rivalries as they come, it's like these are natural and they happen because of high leverage games and high leverage moments that the two teams keep seeing each other at. And I do think what's been fun about these matchups is they are there are no weak links. So when you look at MLS, a lot of times, like, yeah, the talent's elite, but what is the middle or bottom of the starting lineup look like? Is that where it's won or lost? It doesn't feel that way with NYCFC and Philly, and especially over the last few years. And then you've had a clash of styles as well, off and on throughout that time. So it's always fun when they play against each other. Philly feels like it's rounding into form. Philly feels like they did accomplish something in the offseason with the ability with Damian Lowe and, you know, Joaquin Torres to change things up and play two underneath a striker or play three in the back, which opens up Kai Wagner to continue to be one of the most dangerous players in the league.
Let me just say, when Brendan Craig gets back from U20 World Cup, it's not going to be Damian Lowe starting if they go with three in the back.
Yeah, that'd be great. This kid,
he can ball.
He's serving dimes right now on Fiji again. And we always come back to Fiji. This is the game I had circled for this weekend. I think this is the game that I'm going to really be looking forward to watching.
By the way, NYCFC back at home had a tough time on the road, 3 losses and a draw. But at Citi Field, a much different team. Kaylin, we were going to do a deep dive on Portland. I think we're running out of time. We'll save it for next week. So your choice, Steelers' choice, Sporting Kansas City or Portland, you're hitting that early game on Sunday. Who are you most interested in seeing in that match?
I'm interested to see how Sporting Kansas City react. Obviously coming off the disappointing result, but I think everybody was kind of quick to say, oh, well, they're back to their bad form, and I'm not as negative as that in this case. I just think when you look based on what they had to do going into it, they win 3-0 at home against Minnesota. Then they have to go on the road to LAFC. They get 1-1 on the road draw. You know, that is not easy to get that result. And St. Louis didn't play midweek. And then they're just sitting waiting for you at home. And I'm not going to go into your instant replay area, but that first call on the penalty is not a penalty for me.
In the St. Louis game?
Yeah.
I think we both agree with you.
Yeah.
Okay. Once you go down on the road.
Kaylin was so nervous saying that.
I was so nervous. These guys just look like they were
the jackals.
No, Redoya reaches around. He gets the ball first.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. But once you go down like that in St. Louis, like, you're in big trouble. And so that change the outlook for me. So I could see, especially against this Portland team. I really like this Portland team. I just saw them last week. The two center backs, McGraw is very good. Him and Zuperich, and then Diego Chara, of course, in front. But they put a lot of pressure on those guys and Ivicic because they push their fullbacks high. That's right where Sporting Kansas City have the strength with Shallowy and Russell. So I could see Sporting Kansas City having a good matchup and a bounce back at home.
I'm going to go with the other Sunday game, Nashville Crew. I just think a good, sort of tactical game. You have Crew who are going to possess. That's what they do. Doesn't matter where they play, how they play, who they're playing against. Wilfred Nazi wants them to have the ball. They'll advance up the field and try to sort of blunt any momentum of the other team and defend via possession. And meanwhile, Nashville, at home, away, whatever, they're at their best, most effective in transition moments. So can they find those moments? Can they turn the ball over in good spots against this Crew team who have shown that when they get turned around and are going backwards or are forced to make decisions under pressure, that sometimes they break? So I think a fascinating game to finish out.
Plus, they'll be coming off tonight's game against the mighty Mud Dogs.
Yes.
Let's go, Dogs.
Shout out Bob Lilly. Shout out Danny Griffin. Some legends on that squad.
100%. We'll get to the mailbag now. Kalen, are you proud that you and Tom's Golden Boot team is number one right now? 42 goals. Did you know that? Did you listen to the show on Monday?
I did, yeah. Yeah, you didn't want to give us credit. You tried to hop in there and be like, yeah it's me, it's
40
me, it's
assists
me,
as wow. well, says Anders, which didn't... 40? That math is not adding up, Pierce. Yeah, that math is very wrong, Anders. You got to... Come on, clean it up. Clean it up.
Still number one.
Exactly. All right, let's get into the mailbag. David B. Elliott says, stop it with your made-up rivalries.
Assists.
Good math. Yeah, I knew it was not that. David B. Elliott says, stop it with your made-up rivalries, and we won't. He says, we didn't give enough love to Portland, Seattle,
Does anybody think that Kansas City, St. Louis is actually a made-up rivalry?
No. Yeah. Meanwhile, Adam from Kansas City writes in. He says he wants to respond to the conversation you had on the last show about this match between Sporting and City and the possible name for the rivalry. He says he was at the stadium. The energy was insane. The home fans were more hostile than he expected and set the tone for the rivalry. He loved the atmosphere, just didn't love the game, obviously. And he says there's a ton of potential here for a rivalry that could be really fun. He says we were discussing the potential name of the match. He had some thoughts. First, Darbecue is clever, but St. Louis isn't generally considered up there with KC, Texas, Carolinas, etc. So he wouldn't use that. No matter how good the chicken apparently is, Doyle. His wife and him were discussing some potential names on the cross-state drive. Legends, the two of you. Andrew, this list is for you and only you. I added the only you, but I feel that way. The I-70 Classic. They were on I-70 based on the Royals Cardinals series, and then obviously the road Boring. That you drive on to get Boring. Back and forth. Missouri River Derby. The river connects both cities. It's not a bad one. Yeah. Ozark Classico. KC is technically not in the Ozark region, but the area is near both cities. Going to have to throw that one out. Sorry about that. Confluence Cup. Both Stop. Cities are built on the confluence Stop. Of major U.S.
That's
rivers.
A tough one.
Stop.
The Prairie Cup. He
That's
says,
the best
his,
one so far.
Not Prairie. His favorite, but Prairie Cup. Of the US.
That does sound like something like a cow poops in or something. Yeah,
That's
like,
a cow patty.
Yeah. Okay. There you go.
That's a cow patty. Yeah. Come on, Doyle. Yeah, yeah. That's embarrassing.
The Ope Cup. My wife's addition to the list. Classic Midwest. Oh. Also play a game, play in the Open Cup, so it plays on that.
I think of
that's
these
more of a Minnesota one. I respect his wife's addition there, but that would have to be a Minnesota. Yeah.
Darbecue, I think, is still better, but I'm happy to be told I'm wrong from places.
Missouri River,
from.
I-70, and Prairie Cup are the best of this particular list, but we're still looking. Don Hardebeck says, I heard on Extra Time, MLS Review, and many other broadcasts that we need a name for the rivalry between Sporting and St. Louis City. I respectfully submit that we refer to it as El Mo. And I don't know what that means.
And I guess Mo, like Missouri.
The Mo, it's like based on kind of like El Trafico.
We didn't have to read that one.
No, that's true. Yeah. But we do have to read this one.
I'm calling it Darbecue.
Matt Sheehan. Many Peoria City fans, players, and staff go flying carps. That's my addition. Saw part of the podcast recently talking about Peoria and Peoria City soccer. Thanks to Kalen Carr for the kind words about Coach Tim Regan.
Metro Stars legend.
It was also awesome how Andrew has a decent knowledge of the area. I'm pretty sure I like misidentified what university was there and had no idea, but I love you all, everybody in Peoria. We appreciate you just chatting about the club and the show. They'd like to offer Coach Regan or any of the players as potential virtual guests on Extra Time. So he says he knows it's an MLS-based show, but hey, these are young athletes aiming to hit the professional level. Here's the big news. Opening night, they broke their attendance record. The atmosphere was incredible for a USL League 2 game. Nice. Tailgating, food trucks, radio DJ on site. Nearly 1,400 people entered Shea Stadium. That'll hit you where
Let's
in the
go.
Feels, Dave. To have a great time this Friday. We have 5 food trucks, tailgating, and the radio DJ coming back. We hope to break that record once again. Go Flying Carp.
So here's the question for Matt Sheehan and whoever organizes the food trucks for these games. Do you have a food truck that serves Asian carp tacos at these games? Because as I think everybody knows...
Need a rebrand.
The Flying Carp... are named after the Asian carp, which is an invasive species that have gotten into the Mississippi River and Missouri River waterways. And they're out competing local species. And what they're trying to do is rebrand the Asian carp. I believe they're calling them silver fins now.
Why do they need a rebrand?
Because apparently Midwesterners like Andrew Wiebe do not like to eat carp. They have a bad reputation as a bottom feeding fish. Whereas in Asia,
to be fair, as a Midwesterner, I don't eat a lot of fish, period. Also, the Illinois River is the prime waterway running through Peoria.
Thank you. That's clarify. Good. Yeah. So in China, I believe specifically, Asian carp are considered a delicacy. They're a staple food item. So the idea is rebrand the Asian carp, get Americans to develop a taste for them by possibly selling them as fish tacos in taco trucks, and reduce the amount of Asian carp in these waterways that are outcompeting native species and threaten the fishing industry in the Great Lakes.
You know what's interesting? In Seattle, there is a low level of salmon, Chinook salmon specifically. So I don't know if the carp could be potentially used, but this could feed the orca population there.
Ooh.
Wait, did we?
Full circle.
So we're going to use the carp to feed the orca so that the orca don't eat the salmon, which is endangered.
Yeah, well, yes, and just to feed the orcas.
Just in general, just to stay on the good side, because they're up to something.
Should we donate carp to the...
Wow, you just revealed yourself, and I'm going to let our whale...
Boat owners of the Mediterranean to try to throw them off the path, because we got boats sinking.
Can I ask a question maybe not related to this conversation?
Anders says please wrap, but yes.
Do we know that you played an Open Cup game at Shea Stadium?
That's how this started.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Did you score? You guys beat the Crew 3-2.
No, I talked about chasing Robbie Rogers all game, and then suddenly started talking about fish.
And on that note, thank you so much for listening this far. If you are here, you are truly...
We beat them 3-2?
A sicko.
Sorry, I don't know where I made up that score.
All right, we'll see you on Monday, everybody.
I think we did beat them.
Adios!